Glockenspiel!
Liz terrified me with her smile again.
You didn't say I can't that time. That means I can help you.
Her social worker parents had really done a number on her. What do you mean by that?
You'll see,
she said.
Next time I come over.
There's going to be a next time? You really want to come back over sometime?
There you go again, saying whatever you're thinking right when you think it. Yes, if that's okay with you. I had fun.
More fun than at home, for sure.
Or at school.
People aren't like you at school. They don't listen to me.
What?
I didn't hear you. Liz didn't laugh.
But you did.
It didn't matter that the sky was dark outside, that we needed four lanterns to see by. She was lighting up the room for me. It's kind of strange to be talking about how things used to be, knowing that they're so different now. I thought at first it was because of the weather. There's so much snow outside and on the house, on the branches, that it feels like the weight of it all is pushing our cabin slowly into the ground. The window in this room, when the frost creeps across it, it may as well not exist, Moritz. There are a few more golden moments to tell you about before I get to the meat of what went so wrong between me and the girl I fell in lovesickness over. Man, you wanted me to stop faking the happy, but even writing about the happier times has started to feel kind of unhappy. Maybe you should stop getting to know me right now, before it becomes a shit show. Then again, I don't even notice what day of the week it is anymore. So it really shouldn't bother me when Wednesday passes. No matter what, I lie in bed a lot, and I never get up in the afternoon to go stand in the driveway nowadays. Maybe I'm getting better, Moritz. Mom keeps staring at me. She doesn't look exasperated anymore. She looks really tired. Moritz, tell me some good news. Would that be okay? Sincerely, Oliver.
Chapter 12. The Books. I think this is the first time you did not needle me about the lab. This, more than anything, tells me how unhappy you must be. I am the one who told you to be honest with yourself. Never feel as though I do not wish to hear about it. Between the two of us, perhaps we can spread the misery a bit thinner. You need no masks with me, Ollie. I hear loud and clear your plea for good news. I can oblige. It does not do to dwell on things that upset us. Dwelling can make things fester. It is better to bury dark thoughts. Let me tell you a wondrous story. For once, let me be the shining one. It is springtime. Birds are noisiest now. I can almost see the shape of the sky. Bernholt Regan offers basic courses in all major subject areas, but the school is heavily focused on home economics, finance, safety courses, courses that will be most useful for students destined for jobs that demand no university degrees. Because I love literature and my school does not, I despise Literatur with Frau Mellmann. Frau Mellmann is a woman whose nostrils are eternally flaring, whose eyes are forever narrowed as if she is sucking the bitterest of pills. And she is. She chose a career that she both loathes and is terrible at. Bitterness makes sense. When she reads the works of great poets, words turn to fire and brimstone on her scorching breath. Even when we are not reading Dante. I sit beside the window in the second desk from the back of a classroom, as far from her cheek-sucking as possible. I told Frau Mellmann on my first day in her class that being closer to the board would not facilitate my learning disabilities. I told her my frequent blind panic attacks would distract my peers from paying attention to her melodic voice. Melodic as phlegm. I spend silent reading hour with my headphones on, listening to audiobooks that the other students move their lips to in paper format. Before my suspension, we were reading Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha. God knows why. concepts of self-actualization are beyond most of my classmates. They are too busy with concerns about who may be romancing their girlfriends, or how soon they can read a summary of Siddhartha on the internet. Headphones shrink my world. When sound waves are pressed directly against my head, my field of vision is restricted. I can see only the insides of my ears, the outline of my skeleton, the hazy buzz of whatever leaks through the soundproofing. This can be very therapeutic. I sit in my so-called Literaturkurs with the Beastie Boys Paul's Boutique strapped to my head, seeing nothing but a field of numbing, finite sound. Having officially declared blindness after my suspension, I saw no reason for this routine to change. I entered the classroom on my second day back to the static hush that was becoming familiar. It had followed me from the courtyard to my locker, from my locker to the classroom on the second floor, followed me alongside the footsteps of that goth girl. I tapped my cane when I walked to my desk, scuffed my shoe against a bookshelf for effect. Frau Mellmann entered the classroom after I sat down. She looked disheveled, as if she had just been engaging in fisticuffs with a gale. Her eyes homed in on me like one of your laser beams.
"Why are you here?"
"Are you speaking to me, Frau Mellmann?"
"Yes."
My classmates did not look at me.
"Why are you here?"
I cleared my throat. "You need to be more specific."
"Excuse me?
Why am I here in this classroom? Or why am I here on this miserable planet? Why are any of us here, for that matter? What's the point of our poisonous species?"
"You'll be completing your Literaturkurs in the Bibliothek from now on."
"My headphones are just as effective here." I tapped them to demonstrate. In the echoes of someone's snigger, I saw her show her teeth. Was that why she was always unhappy? Because she could not smile properly?
"There are more resources for the visually handicapped there."
"How nice, but I am not handicapped." Again, my impulses are too fast, Oliver. I did not mean to refute being blind. I meant to express my loathing of the term handicapped, behindert, as it reads in German.
"There's no sense denying it, dear," she said.
Then I really was grateful to leave Oliver. Before I succumbed to swapping someone, this time a teacher, with my cane. I deposited my headphones in my satchel, walked to the front of the classroom, dragging that useless stick behind me. This story will become a happy one soon, at least by my low standards. The Bibliothek or library of Bernholt Riken is a spacious room, a smattering of shelves in front of very large windows. The Bibliothek is forever in a state of disrepair. God only knows when anyone last checked out a book for leisure. Yet despite the decrepit state of the library's visitors, the library's contents are meticulously maintained. "Guten Morgen, Frau Pruitt," I told her. She loomed behind the checkout counter, standing as straight as you please, watching me tap my way half-heartedly down the threadbare stairs into the main reading room. "I am here for the wondrous array of materials for behindered students." Frau Pruitt raised an eyebrow, exhaled loudly enough to illuminate her wrinkles.
"Don't say behindert. It's a hideous word."
"She and your Liz are the ones who may be related, Ollie." "You know that I am." I tilted my head away. "You pulled me from athletics. You saw what is beneath my goggles, or rather, what isn't." Pruitt the Impenetrable raised that eyebrow once more at the cane I was tapping against the foot of the checkout counter.
"You don't need this."
She tore it from my fingers. "You recall, Ollie, how MBV enables my reflexes? Even so, I doubt I could have stopped Frau Pruitt from taking that cane from me, even if I'd had hours to prepare. Titanium, indeed. As far as I see it, Mr. Farber, this cane is no more than a toy. This isn't kindergarten. We don't bring toys to school. If you would like your plaything back in the future, and you would not like me to snap it in two over my knee, please take your seat.
My seat?
She gestured to a revolving chair behind the counter. I sat cautiously. That eyebrow of hers was impressive. How could she hold it so high for so long? There will be no headphones permitted in here, she told me as I yanked them free of my satchel. But I truly can't read. You're illiterate? I bristled. Not in the least. Then learn to learn more, Mr. Farber. Frau Pruitt handed me a book from among the pile on her desk. Of course, it looked blank to me, apart from the embossed cover. I struggled to read even that sort of thing. Letters become so jumbled inside my head.
Read this.
I'm not illiterate, but I do have something of a learning... That eyebrow derailed me once more. I mean to say, as much as I would like to, I can't. I frowned. Mock me if you must. She made a sound, Oliver.
Mock yourself. I don't tolerate laziness.
I don't know how it's possible, but you see just fine. So click all you need to until you can read the book. I pursed my lips. I can attempt to read the title because I can see the raised outline of the letters. It's embossed, but images on a flat surface... It was so strange to be talking about this with a severe old librarian, but even stranger that it did not feel strange. Perhaps this was similar to being scolded by a grandparent.
Well, well! Whatever is the matter with your generation? Try harder!
Frau Pruitt slapped her hand on the table.
What about the space between the ink and the paper? Surely printed font is slightly raised or indented on the pages. The font wasn't grown on the trees now, was it? The printed letters are either thicker or thinner.
On a nearly microscopic level,
you're saying that isn't enough for you to work with? I drag you down the hallway, bleeding and mumbling about how bothersome the individual dust motes clogging your vision are.
I had been mumbling.
But now, when you're in a completely reasonable state of mind, you won't even try to read a damn book because it might possibly require the slightest bit of effort? Shame on you, son. Your mother should be ashamed. You don't know anything about my mother! Do not shout in my library.
With each word, she tapped her long-nailed fingers on my wrist. I know your mother isn't here.
Who is? I am.
I swallowed. Undeniably. Start with the title, Mr. Farber. I leaned forward, tried to focus my MBV on the letters. They shifted before my ears.
Click if you need to. Don't be shy.
And she clicked her nails against the book, illuminating the letters for me. I'll be damned, I said. It was a copy of Daredevil Visionaries, Volume 1, by Frank Miller. Her eyebrow was still up near her hairline.
Sit yourself down and clickety-clack until you can read comics like any other boy.
I picked up the book. Oliver, what if people apart from you could see me as something, someone, deserving of happiness? Not as a hero, mind, just as any other boy. The idea frightens me, coward that I am. me, born of science and ambition gone wrong. I felt that wrongness every day, until you wrote to me, until you infected me with wondrous, hopeful nonsense. Frau Pruitt has given me a book about a certain blind superhero, and now I am feeling something other than despicable. What have you done to me, Oliver Paolo? Initially, nothing came of our exercises. Frau Pruitt was right. There is the most microscopic layer of space between pages and the ink on them. Like you, I struggled with focus. I tried to narrow my MBV, tried to aim the clicks precisely. That was the only noise Frau Pruitt would allow me to make in the library. Not that there were many students to disturb in the high-windowed room. I gave myself headaches. A more violent person might have tossed that book down on the floor. Frau Pruitt made no point of watching me work. She went about her business among the shelves, chasing out any pupils who dared giggle in the aisles. At the end of the day, she'd ask me to tell her what I'd read. At first, I only shook my head. Tomorrow, Mr. Farber. After a week, I started to grasp how to see the panels, how to aim the sound so that the words and pictures appeared in my head, just barely. I began to see shapes. Letters. Ollie, if I could write like you do, I could describe how I felt when I read my first page, when I clearly saw those first images. It was only an introduction page, featuring little more than Daredevil's billy club-toting silhouette. But it was enough to make me proud. Matt Murdock disguises his weapon as a cane. You must have known that. And he is blind, but not blind, Ollie. Of course I'd seen letters. I'd memorized the spellings of things, just so no one could ever call me illiterate. But I'd never truly stared at words on a page and strung the shapes together within my head. The librarian handed me another book when I read the first page to her. A book with intimidating heft. It's a start. Later, read this one. I focused. Clicked. Der Herr der Ringe? I said. The Lord of the Rings? I'm an old hippie. So sue me. Here is my grand news, Oliver. I am learning to read. Frau Pruitt is assisting me. Not in Braille, but in text. One day, perhaps even very soon, I'll be able to read your letters on my own. Without father's accent. I'll see your abhorrent handwriting for myself and scrawl back at you in my own. And here is one last bit of news. I unfolded the piercing girl's paper airplane at long last in the library, while the air turned warm outside. Here is what it said. If you're a decent, fluffing human being, stay away from Owen. Fika. Could I actually be such a thing? Mo. P.S. Send me an extensive book list, please. I want to read all the books that made you, Ollie Ollie, up and free.
Chapter 13. The Book Light. That last letter was like staring at the sun, Moritz. Glorious burns on my corneas. I never thought I'd see you that happy, and now I feel like the blind one. I'll tell my keepers I got my dose of daylight. Don't worry about me being unhappy. But which lady do you go for? There's Feek, the goth wonder. What kind of name is Feek? I mean, maybe it's kind of awesome, but I don't think I'm pronouncing it right. Feek. Frau Pruitt of Steel Buns, and Sourpuss Frau Melman, the underdog no one's rooting for. Seriously, I keep teasing you about these dames. That's the polite way to address a group of women, right? But I'm still waiting on your love story. If that sounds dolphin-wavy, so be it. But if we're such good friends, I don't see why you're so close-mouthed. I mean, you don't think I'd be weird about it or something, right? No matter what you said. Anyhow, I would ask you to send some of that love my way, but I think I'm finally coming around to the idea of perpetual hermit bachelorhood. Hermit bachelors are gentlemen. I have to move on from Liz. It's so cold here for spring. We've still got slush and snow beneath the low boughs of the pines. I spend most days under my comforter. Dorian Gray spends all day sleeping too, and no one wonders if he's depressed. I mean, I can fold paper just fine without standing up. I can do calligraphy in bed. All my boring hobbies can be bed hobbies, so why bother? Auburn Stash wasn't too pleased during my last checkup. He was really gentle when he took my blood pressure, like he was worried he was going to crush my arm in the constricting sleeve. You need more sun. I'm a vampire now, didn't you hear? You need to eat properly.
Hath thee blood for this night creature?
He grabbed my chin and made me meet his eyes.
Do you see me smiling, Oliver?
I can never tell with that mustache of yours, Major Armstrong.
Major Alex Louis Armstrong from Full Metal Alchemist? Why does nobody read manga?
Never mind. Dr. Auburn Stash released my chin and the armband at the same time.
Maybe I need to move out here for a while. You aren't recovering well or at all. And where do you think your mum is right now?
Over the moon?
Don't be cute. She's downstairs, resting. Do you know why?
She had 3 popsicles and now she's feeling a comedown from the sugar high?
She's exhausted. And you're lazing about like a dead boy.
I scowled.
Hey, I didn't ask her to worry. Everything she does is for your sake.
But I'm not the one who wants to marry her. His eyes flashed. For the first time in my life, I wondered if Auburn Stash might hit me. It shut me up, at least.
Oliver, I know you're still, recuperating. I'm just dandy, Doc. I know you're still in pain. But your mum needs you. And you need her. You've only got each other.
She's got you, too. Auburn Stash sighed, plied his goatee with his fingers.
She doesn't have me in the way you're implying. She never will.
It sucked just hearing him say that. You know what I mean, Moritz?
It sucked knowing that all of us idiotic, lovesick cabin people were romantically doomed.
Even Auburn Stash wasn't laughing anymore.
I'll try harder, I said. Please don't leave your other patients high and dry or low and wet or anything else.
He ruffled my hair.
Ollie, you don't really think I'm here because you're a patient. You're family. I could never be grateful enough, really, to have known the Paolos. You and your parents took me from a very dark place to a better one.
Are you about to tell me about the laboratory? About my dad? I promise to eat like a king if you tell me something new. I'll get a tan, honest.
He paused. What a bribe, Oliver. But it's not my place to tell you such things.
Wait. You want to, don't you?
I couldn't believe it. He looked even twitchier than usual. His leg was shaking.
You think she's wrong to keep things from me?
Not exactly, Oliver. I understand your mum's perspective.
Well, that's one of us, I coughed.
Is she really that sick?
She'll be better if you get out of your dark place. It's been months now, Ollie.
But who's counting? He sighed and leaned forward.
But you must know that it really wasn't your fault.
You should go check on her. This vampire needs some shut-eye.
He opened his mouth and closed it again, eyes shining behind his glasses.
I pretended to be fascinated by the loose threads in my sheets until he got the point. After he was gone, I pulled the blinds down and kicked away enough of my books and models to shut the door. It was nighttime inside again.
Maybe I could climb out of dark places if someone pulled me out.
It can't be you, Moritz, because you'll never meet me. and maybe it can't be Liz either. But it used to be. Liz began trying to treat my incurable illness, in secret, of course. If Mom had known what Liz and I were up to, she wouldn't have let the girl within a 50-foot radius of me. I remembered how she'd flipped out at Auburn Stash after the house fire because she thought he might be experimenting on me. If she realized what Liz and I were doing, she might have chased her with more than a variety of rolling pins. There might suddenly have been bodies in the fish pond after all. But because Mom had no idea, because she saw that I was a happier kid and I didn't try running away from home anymore, we had some fun before Liz started going to high school. Liz explained my circumstances to her parents, who were exactly the sort of accepting people she had described them to be. Her father wrote Mom a letter that made her teary-eyed, made her run around opening windows and singing. Despite the locked doors, I think Mom always wanted me to have friends. But it was pretty hard to persuade people to send their kids to a cabin in the woods to spend time with someone they presumed was a young delinquent and his basket case caretaker. Starting the fall, I turned 11. Every Wednesday afternoon, Liz's dad dropped Liz and her bicycle off at the end of our long driveway. She rode up to our porch, usually wearing a plaid skirt and white tights coated in mud. She always shouted, "I'm here!" at the top of her lungs, even before she was within sight of the cabin. I was always already in the driveway. "And I'm here!" Where else could I be? The second time Liz came over, she came to my room carrying her dad's borrowed book light inside her raincoat. The book light had a tiny electric battery in it that I could practically smell on her. "Why would you bring that?" I snapped. "Calm your jets, Up and Free. It's turned off. It's tiny." "Yeah, well, so are particles of Hebanon. They'll still curdle your blood." "What's Heb—" "Oh, forget it. Look, Ollie, don't pretend to be a sissy, because you aren't." "Oh, so you've noticed I'm not a girl." "Sheesh, Ollie, you'd have a hard time making friends even if you could go to school. You're a charmer." She actually punched my bedspread in annoyance. "Gah, this is what I'm saying. You're never serious about anything." "I'm serious about being afraid of that book light." "No." "What?" I blinked. She didn't look away. "You're not. You can't be. I watched you run straight at that power line. You let it tackle you without even hesitating. Don't pretend to be a sissy." And she pressed it into my hand. "I like you because you don't pretend." It was the most precious thing I'd ever held. Imagine being able to read at night without a lantern. Every week, she handed that book light to me, and I would hold it, even though it buzzed oddly against my skin and flared in my aura, gave me the pre-seizure wooziness. I held it tight, because she asked me to. But before she started helping me, she began each afternoon by listing off things I'd never done until I was crazy annoyed. No one could rile me like Liz, even if I met all the other people in the world. "You've never sat in a massage chair or seen a sitcom. I hear they aren't funny anyway. You've never seen a toll booth. Why would I want to? Or a humidifier. Hey, low blow. I'd love to see a humidifier. Or even a lamp. I've seen lamps, damn it." Once I was angry, she would toss the light to me. I shivered when I caught it, my head throbbing, but I wouldn't fall in front of her again. I held it for as long as I could. My palm sizzled. She grinned. "See? No biggie." Over the several months' worth of Wednesdays, we got up to a lot of shenanigans in the woods. Climbing trees and looking for frogs, building forts and digging disgusting muddied swimming pools that always ended up filled with earthworms and leaves and deer piss after a day or so. We spent a lot of days at the junkyard, too. We had scavenger hunts orchestrated by Uncle Joe, who mostly liked to sit on the porch with a beer and, weirdly, Noam Chomsky books in hand, hollering instructions at us from his lawn chair. He also liked to take photos of birds. The batteries in his camera were small and far enough away that they didn't bother me. We used to lie on the roof of the Getamobile and count stars, which sounds hammy but was actually nice. Or we'd set up a tent in one of our backyards and have a campfire, and catch fireflies and shout, "Rabbit!" whenever smoke wafted into our faces. I never challenged the power line, although we passed close to it when we were walking the trails. We were always quiet when we were near it. It was like an unspoken rule. I was biding my time. So was the power line. But I didn't really want to leave home as much anymore. Home was where Liz came to find me, where I shouted, "I'm here!" Liz brought the book light all the time, for what good it did. The one time she tried switching it on before tossing it to me, I started shaking, and it somehow got flung against the far wall of my room. I hadn't thrown it. It just buzzed and jolted and got as far from me as possible, like it had a mind of its own, like it couldn't bear the bizarre charge of me. That electromagnetic repulsion effect had happened again, and I was panting. "Maybe next week," she said. "Don't let it get you down." It made me queasy. Not the electricity, the way she said that. Maybe she was starting to believe what I told her from the start. There was no getting better. But let's stave off the darkness a little longer, okay? I've saved the best day for last. Moritz, I don't know why I didn't say it clearly. Caught up in my own crap, I guess. But it's awesome that you're learning to read. I'm going to send you the best reading list I can think of, and purposely tuck some crappy books between the good ones to keep you on your toes. I'm evil. It's funny imagining you reading, oh so slowly, oh so clickety, just to realize that you've read a bodice-buster romance about a lusty pirate and a blushing damsel. Don't ask me why I have those books. I have broad tastes, okay? Are you interested in space cats? I'm not going to say that you could be any other boy, though, Moritz, because I still think you should be aiming for total badass superhero type. Yeah, I knew about Matt Murdock's darn echolocation. I was being cunning, see? I am waggling my eyebrows and nudging you with my elbow. MBV is worthy of comics. All those times I told you to have confidence and you finally get it from a disgruntled librarian? Are you shitting me? You are a decent human being. Again, I despise the way you despise yourself. And if you really want to talk to Owen Abend, you should go for it anyhow. Feek the Fierce can't stop you. Maybe that's why Liz left me behind. I never threw an airplane at her face. Ha ha. Ollie. P.S. I guess I haven't been needling you so much lately because I'm sick of getting needled myself. Seriously, if people keep tiptoeing around me like I'm on my deathbed, I'm going to go from troubled Jekyll to apeshit Hyde. I may throw battle-ready Dorian at their faces. He may be a cuddlesome lump, but he's got the teeth of a piranha. My deadly Persian cat.
Chapter 14. The Cigarette. I am irritated that you are trying to, set me up with three different ladies that I am acquainted with. I know you think yourself quite the comedian. I want no part of your speculation, you snickering fiend. You may not be needling about the lab, but allow me to silence your newest needles. I don't wish to discuss my romantic inclinations. This has nothing to do with you and everything to do with me, Oliver. I trust you, but this issue is not one I trust myself to speak about. As for fearsome Fika, that's pronounced Fika, there have been unusual developments in that area. Calm yourself. They are of an unromantic nature. I did not know how to approach Fika. It was not that I could not find her. I saw her every morning before school started. Fika is always easy to find. She jangles, thumps. She announces her every movement with an arrogance that would terrify lesser men than you. I am a lesser man. But I had to brave an attempt. Thanking Owen has become a fixation. After he was absent from school for several consecutive days, I resolved to confront her. On a brisk April morning, I heard her stomping on the far side of the school. She was looming by the recycling bins. There was her slight wheezing, her noisome piercings. She was tapping away on the keypad of an outdated, battered phone. She has taken to jabbing her cigarettes into a long, sharp cigarette holder. I had carefully considered what I would say, how I would describe the debt I owed to Owen. I wanted to tell her, as thoroughly as possible, that fluff off, like a hissing viper. Yo, my disarming introduction. I told you to fluff off. Never say yo again. Duly noted. I coughed. An American boy sometimes encourages me to use outdated slang, and I am fond of 80s hip-hop music. She flicked a cigarette to the ground, stomped on it. God, I wish I could beat you. Spit out what you want. It's regarding... Beg pardon, were you chewing tobacco and smoking simultaneously? Do I have to answer that? You can see what's inside my mouth. She tucked her hands into her pockets. You still forget to use your cane half the time, you know? And real blind people don't tap them like that. You look fluff and spastic. I'm sure I would know more about that, being the blind one. This time she aimed a punch at my nose. I twisted my head away. Are you done? You've made your point. I breathed deep. I read your note. The bell rang overhead, but she began walking away from the school building toward the back entrance in the street. Took you long enough. There's no call for rudeness. Wow, that means a whole lot coming from you. Tell me why I have to stay away from Owen Arbend. What? You gonna beat me up if I don't? Oh, wait, you're a pussy. I am not. And yes, theoretically, I could beat you. I'm capable. She was still scowling. Yeah, you could. But you fluffing didn't. You let Lenz smash your face in. Then he bashed in Owen's face for helping you, you mopey bastard. But you don't give a shit about that. I do. I want to thank him. You and your confounded boots won't allow me to. Confounded boots? Or whatever you call them. She eyed me in silence. Then, Owen's thinking of dropping out of school, you know. Let me speak to him. Trying to be heroic, Ollie. She coughed into her hand. Fluff it. Come on. And she walked right out of the schoolyard and into the street. What are you doing? The final bell has rung. She kept walking, loud as a rampaging elephant. What could I do? Soon she would be lost in the early morning crowds, lost to my sight despite the volume of her. I followed her into the chilly morning. Fika led me to a Kneipe I hadn't known existed, a pub of sorts called Der Kränkliche Dichter, the Sickly Poet. It was tucked away behind the city plaza, not far from the Städtisches Kaufhaus, a multi-storied shopping mall. Halfway there, while we were passing through a flower market that smelled so strongly of blossoms that I imagined I could almost see colors in the scents, she yanked the cane from my hands. "I'll show you how it's done." Fika waved the cane in huge arcs. People scurried left and right to avoid her blows. She closed her eyes and mimed a look of utmost concentration. Old women covered their mouths and tittered with concern. "Stop that," I said. Fika smirked. "But I'm blind. It's distasteful." She thrust the cane against my chest. "Isn't it, though?" I was relieved when we escaped the stares of stallholders, but my face was still burning. We entered the cool dark of the Kneipe, the smell of smoke and damp. The barman, wearing a beret, of all things, nodded at Fika like they were old friends. We sat down in a corner booth removed from the weekday morning patrons. I noticed a stage in the center of the room. A circular space where a man was crouched beside a microphone. She nodded at it. "Look." "What is he doing?" She pursed her lips. You didn't even turn around. You can see what's behind you, even?
Well, yes.
I often forget to turn my head when people say, look. How does it work, exactly? It isn't dinner conversation. Here we were, casually discussing the ailment that usually made young ladies trip backward over things, Oliver. Why not? I'm not ordering a damn thing. I can see anything that I can hear. A crude way to describe it. Are you familiar with echolocation? Although the comparison, She chewed her cheek, didn't blink. I know it can be unsettling. Let me appease you. I intentionally turned around in my seat. I mimed looking at the stage as if I had not been able to hear its location since I'd stepped in, as if I were normal. My, what is he doing? Man, you're a freak. Do not call me that. I can call you anything I want. You owe me. Why should I owe you anything? She sighed, rasping on smoke. Owen is my little brother. I had to bandage his fluffing wounds after Lentz knocked his head against the bleachers. I had to sit next to him when he got his stitches, and he got two teeth pulled. After he helped you. The blood left my face. I had not realized the extent of Lentz's handiwork. When was it? Right after he handed you your goggles. Gabor turned his back to calm the masses, the idiot, and the moment he wasn't looking, Lentz went apeshit on Owen. He always goes apeshit on Owen. Why do you think he's still suspended? Is he all right? What's it to you? She watched me for a moment, shrugged. Well, his face isn't a fluffing purple blood cake anymore. She nodded at the stage. Shut up, this guy's about to perform. On the stage, the man stood up straight, nodded at his minuscule mourning crowd, cleared his throat, and began reciting into the microphone. It was a torrent of melancholy sound, Oliver, and it carried across the room, illuminating every crevice until I was almost blinded by the pocks and scrapes in the bar.
Wir sind für nichts mehr erreichbar, nicht für Gutes noch Schlechtes. Wir stechen hoch, hoch über dem Irdischen, jeder für sich allein. Wir verkehren nicht miteinander, weil uns das so langweilig ist. Keiner von uns hat noch etwas, das ihm abhanden kommen könnte. Über Jammer oder Jubel sind wir gleich unermesslich erhaben. Wir sind mit uns zufrieden, und das ist alles. Die Lebenden verachten wir unsagbar, kaum dass wir sie bemitleiden. Sie erheitern uns mit ihrem Getür. Wir lächeln bei ihren Tragödien.
Roughly, we are touched by nothing, no longer responsible for good and evil. We stand high, high above earthly concerns, every man for himself. We do not speak to each other because that is boring. None of us cherishes anything, and so we have nothing to lose. We are as content to be miserable as we are to be happy. We are satisfied, and that is everything. We pity the living, just as we despise them. Their fuss is amusing. We smile at their tragedies.
What is this? I whispered.
You're a fan of performance speaking?
I'm not.
Well, you suck. That monologue, it's from a Frank Wedekind play, spoken originally by a character named Moritz.
I swallowed. The ghost of a boy named Moritz, who took his own life earlier in the play. he was doing poorly in school because he could not sleep. I stood. I'm leaving.
Moritz, wait.
Oh, yes, my cane. I have to be distasteful.
No, sit down. Look.
Do not ask me to look. I am always looking. She bit her lip.
Clink. I mean, come here, sit. You want to meet up with Owen? Fine, I can arrange that. But not at school. Not where Linz would hear about it.
I sat back down. Then where? She smiled.
First, why don't you go on up and perform? To show you're a dedicated little gerbil.
I would prefer not to.
Go on up, or I'll never let you see him. Ever.
If I could scowl properly. You can't be serious. You bring me here, and then you demand.
You simply cannot be serious.
She blinked, clicked her piercings, so that I could see the smallest of sardonic dimples.
Can I not be?
Infuriating wretch. I stood up once more.
Get your cane.
No. I pointed my finger in her face. I am going to silence you, you rackety girl. She blinked in shock, then broke into an enormous grin, the first I had ever seen on her face. It was a coiled thing, not precisely pleasant. I walked to the stage, bowed, took the microphone, and I owned the stage with my personal rendition of Dr. Dre's immortal masterpiece, Nothing But a G-Thang. I sat myself carefully in my chair. The morning crowd was still applauding. Beverages of an alcoholic nature appeared at our table. Old Swiss men slapped me on the back.
Allow me to meet with Owen, please.
At this point, I would let you impregnate me, Fika cackled.
That would be unnecessary and undesirable.
Ha! Fluffin' unreal! I thought you were taking the piss earlier, but what the hell? How does someone like you get into rap, Brilla?
Brilla translates as glasses or goggles. I folded my hands on my lap. I suppose I've often felt like a public enemy. After a beat, she laughed once again, grabbing my shoulder and shaking it.
Unreal. Fine. Look.
10 p.m. next Friday. He'll be looking for you in the Partygänger discotheque. I'm not one for the discotheque.
Really, Brilla? After what you just pulled?
A fit of passion.
Again, you're a freak. If you want to see him, you've got to meet him in a crowd. Lenz can't get into that club. It's a safe zone. And here's the good news. I'll be coming with you. Looking sickening as always.
Perhaps we have opposing definitions of the phrase good news.
Shut up. Was that a joke? Shut up.
I can manage by myself.
As if. I'm coming. And don't bother bringing your cane.
What on earth, Ollie? What on earth? Tell me of your final happy memory. Next week I can tell you about meeting Owen Arbend, another boy who is making me a decent human being.
Moritz.
P.S. You've asked me not to needle. Don't fling a cat at my face. I would only dodge Mr. Gray. But know that I am worrying. That is all.
Chapter 15. The Living Room. So I want to tell you about the best day of my life. Simply, without fuss or hoopla. Except that isn't really possible, because fuss and hoopla were both present on the day in question. And this was the day when I realized what Liz was to me. I mean, really realized it. I know I've blabbed about being lovesick, but it wasn't always like that in my head. Liz and I were friends, and really good friends. But here was the day that upped the stakes. Now it just sounds all dolphin-wavy up in here, but please have mercy again. The party was for my 13th birthday. It wasn't actually on my 13th birthday, but a few days before it, because normal kids usually have to go to school on Tuesdays. My birthdays were always nice enough before. Mom would usually give me some new model fossils or miniature sarcophagi making kits and make me an awesome multi-layered cake. She went through a wedding cake hobbyist phase. An Auburn stash would come over and join us for a night of stuffing our faces with almond chicken and playing board games. I kick royal ass at Clue, if you're wondering. Pretty tame, by all accounts. But my 13th birthday became a bigger deal. Maybe because I'd become a teenager. I don't think Mom was convinced I'd make it to adulthood, but I was getting closer, and she was getting hopeful. In the weeks before October 11th, she kept dropping all these fond little hints that she was bursting on the inside, and not with grand mal seizures. Like, sometimes she would let her face relax, and she'd just drape her arms around my neck without warning. "You've grown so much. Who's this man in the house?" It was downright creepy. Like a very loving leech had possessed her. She meant well, I think, but it was like she was trying to sap the aging right out of me with statements like, "What happened to my little kickstand?" and, "God, I can't believe how much you look like your father." Catchphrases, Moritz. She developed catchphrases. And she was mentioning Dad, which was even freakier. I started hiding out in the woods more, clambering up into our old tree forts or visiting the pond and dipping my feet in for the hell of it. Mom was way more lenient nowadays, and had been ever since Liz started coming around. Over the past few years, she'd only locked herself in the garage 7 times or so. Another reason to be grateful for Liz. And another reason to miss her, now that Mom is locked inside the garage every other day. Anyhow, she and Liz plotted and schemed behind my back to throw me a party. I knew they were planning something on account of all the obvious whispering and winking, so I was mentally prepared for them to jump out from behind trees and throw confetti in my eyes. On that Saturday, I followed the deer trail to the junkyard, not remotely at unawares. After all, Liz wasn't stopping to scope out things on the forest floor. She was way too eager to get to Joe's. She couldn't keep a secret without it basically leaking out her ears, and she dragged me right through the trees as if we were being chased. They had constructed an enormous white tent, a pavilion of sorts, near the center of the yard, in an open space of 30 feet or so. "You made me a circus! There had better be juggling bears, juggling dead teddy bears." "It's not a circus." I grinned. "Of course not. It's a birthday tent." "You could have at least pretended to be surprised." "You like me because I don't pretend." "Ugh. Just come inside, doofus." "Nope. I hate to disappoint. Let me try again." I blinked and rubbed my eyes with my fists.
"Whoa! What could that be? Surely not a surprise party."
"Shut up, doofus. You don't have to finish every sentence with doofus, you know. A boy has feelings, you know."
"You don't have to finish every sentence with you know, I know."
She pulled me into the tent. What I stepped into was a living room. Not like the living room in our cabin, which is full of lanterns and bookshelves and a fireplace and Mom's handmade furniture and paintings. I stepped into a modern living room. A television, a stereo with speakers, phones on the coffee table. Power sockets and plugs and wires, wires everywhere, tucked behind couches. There were so many electronic devices in there that I jumped backward and trod on Liz's foot before I realized that not one of them was giving off seizure-inducing color. Before I realized that every object was an imitation or had been gutted. I could never have hoped to see so many people in one place. I heard later that Liz, Mom, and Joe had checked the pockets of and patted down every person who arrived. If anyone resented that, they didn't tell me. Most of the guests were Liz's extended family. Her muddy cousins, perfumed aunts, and baseball-capped uncles. I spotted the local state park guy who keeps an eye on wildlife and plays poker with Mom sometimes, too. And Lucy, Mom's pharmacist, whose glasses sparkled with rhinestones. But Liz had also persuaded two friends from school to stop by and meet me, friends I'd heard about in passing with increasing regularity over the past few months. A blonde boy named Tommy, a red-haired girl named Michaela. I remember just staring at her, half convinced she was wearing a wig, just like Mom has started doing. I'd never seen curly hair in person before. "Surprise!" yelled the crowd, just like in a story. And it was a crowd. At least 30 people were gathered there in my mock living room, standing beside the television and a vacuum cleaner and a laptop and a, oh my fluffing God, a humidifier. "Welcome home," said Liz. I stared and stared and said nothing. "Oliver," said Mom, "say something." "You remembered. I can't believe you remembered the humidifier." I almost burst into manly tears. Of course they would have been manly. I was 13 now. I'm pretty sure the deformed face I made to fight back those manly tears convinced all the people at the party who didn't know me already that I was a nut job. But that was okay. They didn't have to understand. Liz did, and she put her arm around me until I could stop sniffling, laughing her light laugh. Mom looked teary too, so I smiled and said, "Give me a tour. Eat your cake first." After we massacred the towering skyscraper of a cake, Mom had shaped it into a fondant-coated amplifier, and the other guests started meandering, beers in hand. Liz and her friends took me around the living room to show me how all the illusions were created. There was dry ice in the humidifier, emitting clouds of white fog. There was a wind-up music box inside the gutted boombox. The speakers were really strange because they were made of cardboard. "Where did you get all this fake stuff? Why would anyone ever make cardboard televisions? Not just for me, I mean." I blinked. This wasn't made just for me, was it? "Tommy's dad owns a furniture shop. They put out cardboard appliances and stuff so people can imagine what the furniture would look like in their own houses better." "That is so weird. People are so weird. Thanks, Tommy?" Tommy nodded at me. Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one feeling speechless. "Tact, Ollie. Where has it gone? He's shy." "Oh, I've never met a shy person before. What's that like for you?" Michaela burst into high-pitched giggles while Tommy stared at his feet. "Oh my God, Ollie, you're just too funny." Michaela put her hand on my arm, which was weird. Liz gave her a look and steered me away from them, dragging me over to the bookshelf. There were some books, presents from Auburn Stash and Mom. Mom knew I was getting really into medieval folklore, so she had some books on King Arthur, and Auburn Stash had a sense of humor, so there were also copies of the Adrian Mole diaries and some Terry Pratchett books. But scattered among the books were some framed photographs. My mouth fell open. "Whoa, wait, are these photos of us? Of me?" "Yep. Happy birthday, Ollie Up and Free." There was one of us lying on the roof of the Getamobile, one of us up in the tree branches, one of us just standing in the woods, Liz crouching over something, me just watching her with this bemused expression on my face. I'd never seen a photograph of myself before. I didn't know I was that gangly. And Liz. No matter what, she looked pretty. Even in the pictures where she was caked in mud and her hair was in disarray, it was like she was always lit up from the inside. "But how?" Someone cackled behind me. Junkyard Joe cracked a grin. "You didn't really think I was just sitting there on the porch taking pictures of birds now, did you?" "I did, actually. You said you were an ornithologist." Joe cackled again and took a swig of beer. "Hell no! I can't tell a duck from a chicken. But I ain't a bad photographer. I figured I was sitting far enough away, and there's a hell of a zoom on those lenses." I swallowed. "Thanks, Mr. Fay." "Ain't no thing. It's nice having folks in the yard. You gave her a reason to come visit, you know." He looked a bit sad for a moment.
You ain't the only one who gets bored in the woods.
I turned around, and there was Michaela again. Your hair is crazy. Why is it so curly?
Oh, stop it.
Again, she put her hand on my arm. It bothered me, though I couldn't